Hey, it's Rob. It was an amazing week of Survivor, and we had incredible podcasts with Christian Hubicki and Steven on the Know-It-Alls. Make sure you catch those as well. Plus, The Circle was back this week with an AI contestant. Taryn, Mike Bloom, and Puya broke down the first week of drops from The Circle and on Renap. Who did Sam Moore find for the big guest? Find out on this week's Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast, all right here on RHAP. We know reality TV.
Welcome back to the Offspeed Podcast. My name is Grace, and I am your host for this sports podcast, where we dive deep into different sports and take a look at different sports stories around the world. Today, I'm very excited to be joined by two guests for two different segments. First, I'm joined by Mikey D, or Mike, a friend of Mikey Harrison, who's been on the show before. Mike is an MMA fan. We're going to chat through the world of mixed martial arts. We talk mostly about UFC, although we do talk about some other stuff that Mike watches. I haven't watched MMA or UFC stuff in a minute, many years since I've dabbled in the world of UFC. Although, as Mike points out, it's very close to wrestling, which is something that's very near and dear to my heart. So we chat a bit about that. And then after that, MJC, wonderful Michael J. Clark, joins to chat about the upcoming trade deadline. We look at some of the biggest names on the board, trying to make some predictions as to where we think they're going to go. And then selfishly, we talk about both the Toronto Blue Jays and the New York Yankees and talk about what moves they might be making. So very fun show today. First up will be a chat with Mike, actually double Mike this week. First with Mikey D and then with MJC. That also rhymes. I didn't plan this. I didn't think about it till now. So, without further ado, let's jump into my conversation with Mike. Welcome back to the Off Speed Podcast. As promised, I am here with Mike. Mike, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thanks. So you are first time on the podcast. Excited to be chatting with you about mixed martial arts, MMA. But do you want to give people your sports history, your sports background before we jump into specifically what you're here to talk about?
Yeah, sure. I grew up, didn't really play sports. I watched a lot of pro wrestling growing up. Raw.
Yes.
Attitude Era was the best era.
Yes.
And from there, that's where I sort of got into MMA around that era. If you're familiar with Attitude Era, you know the big MMA name there.
I am. I certainly am. I think if folks are more casual, if you're not the Wrestling Rehab up here on the network. Matt Scott and Mari will fill you in on the wrestling background. But the Attitude Era being sort of predominantly the late 90s. Yeah.
Yeah. Late 90s. There were two wrestlers that showed up there, Dan Severn and Ken Shamrock. And when they were introduced, they were like, these guys are street fighting, mixed martial artists, UFC guys.
Shamrock, I was like, the world's most dangerous man.
Exactly. Yeah. And he was off the chain. He was like a madman, right?
He used to snap and then he'd like break someone's ankle. He was the, I think incredibly underrated professional wrestler, Ken Shamrock.
Yeah. 100%, 100%. So like when he showed up, I was like, what is this? And the internet was big at that time. I searched it up and that's when UFC was slowly starting, mid 90s. That's what got me into also boxing, big into boxing, Mike Tyson, Roy Jones Jr.
Yeah.
Prince Nassim.
Yes.
So those guys, amazing. And then I started training in boxing a couple of years ago.
Oh, cool.
It's super fun, but getting punched in the face is not as fun as it looks on TV.
Yeah. That that's cool that you do that thing. Not that I am ready to do that thing, but it is cool. That is cool. You get punched in the face. Yeah. I have a friend who does some, does boxing, who like loves it as like a workout, you know? Cool. So that's your bet. You were a wrestling person, got into anything, any of the other like main sport? Are you like anything else? I know you were from Toronto at one point. Any of the Toronto teams?
Interestingly enough, no.
Oh, I'm not. Okay.
Well, I used to live with past guest on your show, Mikey Harrison.
Yes.
And he's Hound a huge up. Sports guy. Yeah, Hound
huge up. Huge sports guy. Yeah.
The biggest sports guy I know. but I have no interest in those sports, really.
That's amazing.
It's hilarious because he will talk to me about sports and I'll be like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Do you know what it's to give some insight here on like how you and I got connected is through Mikey is that you and I believe potentially lived in the same house at different times. But actually, I might have even lived in your room. I might have taken over your room. I don't know if we didn't talk about this in the post meeting. But I feel like there was this moment, and I have another friend, Dan. I'll give a shout out to Dan if Dan's listening, who also lived. I lived with him, and I feel like it was so funny because like not that like Dan and I weren't sports fans, but we were also like wrestling fans. And I feel like there was a time where we, I feel like Mikey used to get very annoyed. He's like, I just had a wrestling fan move out, and now there's still like, how did like, you know, this room can't just be people who are wrestling fans, which is that's very funny.
Yeah. Yeah. He couldn't escape it.
He can't escape it. All right. So let's talk, I know you said like, to a degree, like you watch a lot of, UFC or MMA, in general. What is it about? I mean, you talked about like, spotting Ken Shamrock, Dan Severin, maybe didn't have quite a successful run in the World Wrestling Arena, World Wrestling Federation. But that like lured you into sort of this thing. What is it about like MMA and UFC that like gets you to turn on the TV?
It's I think growing up, the movie Bloodsport probably made the whole, one-on-one fightings thing really exciting. Mm-hmm. And that's what basically UFC was at the start. It was two fighters, completely different styles, and seeing who was the best, right? It's like a karate versus a boxer or something like that. And that was just really cool because in your mind, you'd always say, yeah, the karate guy would do a lot better against this person. But in real life, you can actually see it happen. And that was really cool. And I find a one-on-one sport a lot more exciting than a team sport, just because a one-on-one is just, it's that person versus that person. It's not based off of whether one part of the team's weak, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's just like, it's pure athleticism.
And I feel like that thing you were saying about like blood sport, I feel like there was a time where like these sort of like film and media stuff that was like a little bit more like mixed martial arts tournaments, things. I feel like that's 1988 that Bloodsport comes out, which is like probably at least 5-ish years before like the UFC mm-hmm. becomes like, I guess, early 90s. It looks like they're running events. I feel like UFC to a degree has always got a bad rap. I mean, from early on as well, in terms of it being like, it is just people fighting. Not that other sports don't have that, but it is like brutal and people get hurt and whatever. But I think that there's also probably this like really visceral, nature of like intrigue of like, I'm going to watch two people like fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. It was really exciting, especially in the beginning of UFC, because there were a lot less rules.
There were no rules, apparently, at the very beginning. They used that tagline, there are no rules.
I think one of the rules was like no eye gouges, but the rest, you could punch someone in the dick. You could do all this other. I don't know if I could swear on this podcast.
That's okay. That's right. Yeah.
But like you could do all that stuff, which was just like crazy. But now they've added more and more rules.
I guess in a UFC 4 qualifying match, these two guys had to be like, we're not going to pull each other's hair, right? Jason Farron and Guy Mesger are like, we both have ponytails, we're not going to pull each other's hair. I'm like, yeah, deal. Which is kind of hilarious.
That's hilarious.
In terms of and again, I'm always coming from this as a lot of times with these sports I'm pretty casual. I did get a little bit into MMA when and this will perhaps not surprise you, Mike, as we're on a like a reality TV show network that like what was the show on Spike TV?
That was the Ultimate Fighter.
The Ultimate Fighter. When I was like getting into it. There was some wrestling that would happen on Spike TV, and then Spike TV had The Ultimate Fighter. Right. Is that still around?
I believe it is. There are.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, and some of them are still becoming like the champions. So they made it from there up to champion, which is really good. I haven't watched an episode since like third season, I think, on Spike.
That's fair. But
it's a good show, though.
Part of what I was going to say is I know, there's. It feels like UFC for you know, however much we want to talk about UFC, like sort of dominated, became the big, you know, mixed martial arts thing, at least in North America, in terms of like, it feels like MMA and UFC were a little bit synonymous. Not that there aren't other organizations, but what do you think it is that like, what did UFC do that like made it, you know, become sort of the premier place that if you want to be a mixed martial arts fighter, that's where you, you know, that's sort of like the end goal. Guess not to everybody, but
I think their marketing is probably better than everyone else, because if you talk about MMA, people just think UFC. That's one of those things, right? It's their marketing that was able to do that, and they're able just to dominate it all, because all the fighters want to go to UFC, even though their pay is awful compared to the other promotions. They still want to go there for the fame, because everyone knows UFC.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, there's this thing of like, I feel like UFC has to some degree always tried to make sure that they get the biggest and, you know, the best fighters. I don't know that it would be true to say that, like, you know, this is in the sense that like the best fighters are always in UFC. But I also feel like they do a good job at like promoting their stars. I mean, like, I feel like Ronda, you know, if we're talking about like the wrestling crossover of it all, like Ronda Rousey, it feels to a degree a household name. Certainly Conor McGregor, even, you know, years back, all of the, you know, Dos Santos, and, you know, there's like so many people that I mean, like, I guess I'm like pretty like connected to UFC by adjacency, by being a wrestling fan, but I do feel like there are like a ton of like names. Randy Couture, I mean, you could just go through, you were talking earlier about Ken Shamrock, Dan Severin, George St. Pierre, like they have built up like superstars, like sport superstars.
Yeah, I think they're sort of, I think a lot of UFC fighters, when they're promoting their fights, they sort of take on the persona of wrestling wrestlers.
Yes.
Where they have to basically play up a character to sell this fight. And the more they sell it, the more ticket prices and the higher their pay. So the people who can do that really well, they're able to just move on to other things if they want to and become a household name. I forgot that one fighter's name that was in The Mandalorian. She's another example of someone who could just like move to different places.
Gina Carano, was in Strikeforce, and I think another, I don't know, was she in UFC at one point?
Yeah, I think she was in UFC. Okay.
I
think those people they're just really good at doing that stuff, and UFC, just because they're able to promote, they're able to just put those people in different movies, just different TV shows, all that stuff.
Yeah, I feel like their TV deal also, you know, they still run off of the premise of like, it feels still like a pay-per-view type events. I don't know how true, is that true? Like, what is the current state? But what my point was, it felt like with the rise of it, it was like, they did have these like TV deals where they were, you know, doing all the Ultimate Fighter or like Countdown specials or UFC Unleashed. That then encourage you to then go buy the pay-per-view, which is a model that wrestling has also had for a long time. Is that still sort of the schedule, the like promotion nature of UFC?
Yeah, well, UFC, I think they just signed a deal with ABC. So, they have their UFC Fight Nights, which are their sort of mini pay-per-views that lead up to the main main cards. They'll air those on ABC, and
that feels like Spike TV to like ABC feels like wild. I know that they didn't they there's some ESPN stuff now, right? Weren't they? Isn't there a deal that there's an ESPN partnership? I believe.
They also air their UFC fights on ESPN Plus, I believe.
Right.
And there's a Contender series, which is like the Ultimate Fighter. I think that might be actual sequel to it.
It's called Dana White's Contender series. Dana White, for folks who don't know, is he the owner?
I think he's the CEO. He's not the CEO. Owner anymore. Just, yeah.
Yeah. He's a dude. He's wild. But I think also very much like, you know, a lot, you could put a lot of the success of UFC on his shoulder.
Yeah, for sure.
It looks like in 2019, he signed a new 7-year contract. He's the president of the UFC. That makes sense. Okay, so like you are somebody who watches. I fell out very like a few seasons into The Ultimate Fighter, and for me, it was not something I was like buying the pay-per-views, but as you're somebody who watches regularly, what is it or who is it currently that like gets you to watch MMA?
There's a few fighters. Again, I'm awful with the name. I'll have to look them up. But I'm one of those guys who I'm not sure if Hound Dog told you. I am a person who cheers on people based off of the acronym ABBA, which is always bet Asian. Okay. So if there's ever an Asian fighter, I will always bet on them. But
that makes sense.
On them.
Yeah.
Yes. And right now there are a lot of Asian fighters. So, okay. Which gets me watching a lot more. But there are some O'Malley. I'm not sure if you've heard him about him. Yeah.
No.
He's basically Sean O'Malley. He's a guy with like rainbow hair.
Oh yeah,
really good fighter.
Yes.
Yeah, really good fighter. He has a very good personality, like one that can actually sell tickets. But the one problem is he does pick and choose his fighters. He doesn't choose the most exciting fights, but he's basically fighting to get to renew his contract so he can get more fights. I'm assuming. But yeah, very exciting fighter.
Sean O'Malley, it's just somebody from what I'm seeing, just has like a pretty big personality. When you're talking about like he gets to pick his fights, I'm seeing he's like ranked 13th in the bantamweight rankings, which maybe I'm underestimating what being 13th ranked gets you. How much like you can you have like quite a bit of like influence and say over like is it like if you're a draw, does it matter where you're ranked?
Yeah, so if you're a draw, you can sort of pick who you want to fight next rather than going straight to the top. Because Sean O'Malley, he can start, choosing the fifth place fighter if he wants to. It'll be a harder fight. So he, in his mind, he has, I think, like two fights left or something in his contract. Rather than waste these two fights on a number five fighter and getting paid his current salary, he wants to do two more fights with some weaker people, maybe renew his contract, get paid more, and then choose the higher ranked fighters. Right? Smart, but it's sort of boring as well.
That is the thing of like the entire basis of like, you know, I think for a lot of people, like what gets you to watch is like, yeah, who am I watching fight? It seems pretty clear that like you'd want the two best fighters to fight. So the fact that like somebody can have enough sway to say, no, I'll fight these like weaker guys, which could also backfire, I guess. Right. And the fact that like they could lose. The fact that they can sort of pick their fight, which is maybe a less exciting fight. How does UFC or these other organizations like counteract that? Like, in terms of ultimately at the end of the day, it sounds amazing that like on one hand, I'm like, oh, that is boring. And on the other hand, I'm like, well, not as many sports have as much like, not as much of the powers in the players' hands, in terms of like some of these other sports. And so in one way, I can see that that's like a great thing that you get to like, you can always just say like, no, I'm not going to do that. So I just think that's like really interesting and compelling. Mm-hmm. So how does Dana White, when he like wants to book these fights, how does he get around? Is it all just like trying to negotiate people into doing that? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's based off the fighter's leverage, of how much they can actually bring in and stuff like that. If they are a no name and they're demanding to fight certain people, I don't think Dana White's going to give them any like thought. But if it's Sean O'Malley and he brings a lot of people in, he's getting a lot of hype, he might just allow him to be like, okay, you can choose who you want to fight. It's all based off of Dana and the matchmakers in the back for that. Yeah.
We'll date ourselves to the degree to which this will come out later this week, but there is a UFC, which this is wild to me. It's UFC, 277. I guess it isn't as wild to me as a thought, but there is a pay-per-view coming up this Saturday as we're recording this Saturday. Yeah. And it looks like Pena versus Nunez 2 is the headliner. Do either of those names mean... This is a women's fight, I think, right?
Yeah. Amanda Nunes is a very, very good fighter. Uh-huh. I believe she lost her last fight. And this is a rematch.
Okay.
I think her last fight, it was a huge disappointment that she lost. So this should be a good one. She said, I think she was like her mentally, she was not in the fight. So this should be an exciting fight.
This is interesting. She is currently the women's featherweight champion, but this fight is for the women's bantamweight championship, which to me does make sense. As somebody, you can compete in different weight classes. You can change your weight. Surprising to me that you could compete for a championship when you already hold the championship of one other division. That is wild. I did not realize that was. Does that happen often?
It's sort of like boxing, where a boxer can unify a bunch of weight classes. I think Canelo is a champion, I think 2 or 3 weight classes, because the weight classes are based, I think it's like a 10 pound difference for each one. Right. So okay. You just gain 10 pounds of water weight and then fight in the next weight class. The problem is that if you jump a weight class, it is a huge change. People don't think 10 pounds is a lot, but once you put some force in 10 pounds, it becomes a lot. So, it's a whole new ball game. I think Israel Adesanya, he went up a weight class just to try to see if he could do it, and he lost.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that is cool. I do think it's a cool look when somebody has like multiple championship belts. I do think that is really cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, shows that they're powerful, not in just one weight, but in like many weights, which is
In a sport that, you know, the better you are, the more leverage you have, presumably the more money you make. That makes sense that you'd be like, I don't want to just win in one division. I want to win in multiple divisions.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com. Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com. Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
You're talking about, I'm just going to keep asking like these random questions and show you how much of a noob I am. In terms of like you talked about, is it Nunez who lost her last fight? How long ago was her last fight? What's the typical like time between two fights?
If it's a fight between the two same people, it could be 5-6 months in between, just because they have to go first, they have to recover, and then they have to go through training camp again, which could be 2 months. Or something like that, where they just train the entire time, whether it's sparring, nutrition, cardio, all that stuff. So it takes a bunch of time. There are fighters who are like, hey, I'll fight next week or next month. But I don't think the doctors will allow that.
Yeah, fair. This is fun. Nunez and Pena, who are going to fight, they're also the coaches for the Ultimate Fighter 30. To just show that like that show is still going.
They do that a lot. Especially at the finals, they get the coaches to fight each other.
I remember this happening, that it's like you put the two coaches who hate each other, who have a fight upcoming, so they can basically like, not only can you have the Ultimate Fighter as a show, but also so that you can like book a fight between two, you know, two MMA fighters. That makes a ton of sense. Who else is out there right now? I see, you know, I'm looking at like they already have a lot. This is surprising to me that they already have so many of their pay-per-views, like their main events, so to speak, as long as, you know, cards subject to change. But like Usman versus Edwards in August, looks like Chimaev versus Diaz in September. Even to the point where they have UFC 280 in October 22nd, they have the main event scheduled. But yeah, who else is big at the moment?
Francis Ngannou. Basically, like, he's one of the hugest heavyweights out there. He has crazy punching strength. Crazy story. He grew up like as in Africa. I don't know what country in Africa, but he grew up as like a miner there. So as a kid, he was mining for stuff there. And then he escaped and then became a street fighter in France and then moved to the US. It's just a crazy story.
Wow.
And now he's a UFC champ. Insane story. Crazy fighter. Also one of the nicest guys, it seems. If you watch any of his videos, he's just like the most humble guy. Yeah, he's really cool.
That is, he's the heavyweight champion at the moment.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I see.
Some other people. I mentioned him already. Israel Adesanya, the style bender, as they call him. He's very, very good on the mic. I think he said he might be interested in joining WWE afterwards.
Makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. He's just really good with that stuff. And he said he might want to go into acting afterwards. But
what weight class would he be? I'm trying to look.
He's a middleweight.
He's a middleweight. Okay. Adesanya? Is that Israel Adesanya? Right. Is he? Yeah. He's also the champion at the moment, the middleweight champ?
Right. Yeah. He just defended his belt, I think, 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
Yeah. A lot of complaints about him. Apparently, a lot of people are saying he just, when he fights people, he doesn't go all out anymore. He just wants to keep it safe. Which is, I mean, it's fair as a champion. I mean, you just want to keep that money, just try to be safe as possible. But it's also like, you know, for the fans, sort of want to see some knockouts, you know?
Yes, I remember that being a big thing. Is there like, in terms of like how much money you can make, do they still, is it like, you know, similarly to what I remember, you know, from boxing that like, you know, there is prize money. If you win, you make more money. And then there has to be like knockout of the night, which maybe was just like a thing that was like, look at this cool knockout and didn't really mean anything, or like fight of the night. Are those anything that like brings anybody extra money at the end of the night?
Yeah, I think a fight of the night is now $50,000. Wow. Just for that, which is, I mean, it's decent money for the fighter. The one problem is UFC, they pay, it's a lot less than every other organization, like Bellator, which is one of their main competitors. They pay their fighters in the millions, almost like boxer money, which is, you know, it's way better for the fighters, but obviously they won't get as much fame and recognition because no one really watches Bellator compared to UFC.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is a thing I think, you know, I've talked a lot about wrestling. I think there's like a ton of overlap here between wrestling and MMA, but in wrestling, I always felt like to a degree you would see these people go and sign up for WWE. And even if they weren't having, you know, sort of like people feel like they're being underutilized, there was a bit of the, like, the temptation of like, you always wanted to wrestle for WWE, right? Like you always wanted, you know, you want to have your match at WrestleMania. And so I felt like that could be like used as leverage to a degree over. So is that the sort of the same thing that like, is UFC underpaying their competitors because there's the allure of like, yeah, but we're UFC, right? Like to the point where like, maybe we won't pay you as much, but like, you know, if you're the biggest star in the world, you might be able to get a sponsorship deal, like, you know, because you're on the biggest MMA stage there is.
Yeah, exactly. I think that 100% they do that to people because, you know, people want money. They want fame more than anything. And that's what the UFC can bring compared to Bellator or what was it called?
You know, Strikeforce, anything.
Season.
Yeah. Do you follow Bellator? When you're saying you watch a fair bit of MMA when it's on, is that strictly UFC or are you checking out these other companies as well?
I try to watch One Fighting Championship, which is based out of that's based out of, I think, Singapore, which is great for my ABBA style of thing because it's a lot of Asian fighters.
Yes, fair.
They pay their fighters a lot more. And they also have a system where they have cards for warnings. And if there's no action happening, they give a yellow card, and that deducts $10,000 from their pay.
Whose discretion? The referee? The
ref? Yeah. So this basically makes them have to fight all the time, and it's more exciting that way.
That's pretty cool. I like that. It looks like they have a couple of different divisions. Like, it looks like there's MMA and kickboxing and Muay Thai. Yeah. Is it? Yeah.
Yeah. So, they just want to focus on, I guess, a lot of the Asian sports, especially like Muay Thai. They take that a lot more seriously over there. So they do have those fights. They also do some special fights where it's one round of MMA, one round of Muay Thai, and then back to one round of MMA.
Interesting.
They did that a couple of weeks ago with a Muay Thai fighter named Rod Tang. And he's supposed to be one of the greatest Muay Thai fighters out there. And he fought a guy named, his nickname is Mighty Mouse. I forgot his actual name. But yeah, it was a good fight.
I thought I did see some, maybe that was from another, there was a guy named Patricky Pitbull. He's a Bellator fighter, I think. What an amazing. Are there any good MMA nicknames? I feel like I used to know a lot more. Are there anybody with a really good nickname?
I guess Aljamain Sterling, which he was a guy who just who became champion like 2-3 months ago. Mm-hmm. His name's Funkmaster, which is
pretty cool. That's great. Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
If you're big into anime, I guess Israel, the Last Stylebender, that's a cool nickname. There's none that are like really I find really funny or really, really memorable.
I'm trying to look now. Most of these are like, you know, historically some of the best names. I don't see a ton currently. Yeah. Anything else about UFC before? Yeah. Anything we didn't hit on?
I guess the one, this is just one thing I just like to rant about UFC, which is one of the rules is no elbow strikes from 12 o'clock to 6 o'clock. Do you understand what that means?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're basically, you have your elbow up and then you're striking it down as hard as you can. Right.
Right. Right.
Apparently that is illegal. And it's, I think it was from what I heard.
You have to horizontally strike here.
Right.
Your opponent. Yeah.
So from what I heard, when they were writing the rules for UFC, one of the rule guys, he saw at a kung fu show a guy breaking a whole like stack of bricks doing that 12 to 6 elbow strike.
Yes.
And he said, that is so powerful, you cannot use that in UFC. So it's just ever stuck? Since then. Yeah, ever since then, it's That's been hilarious. Banned, which is crazy because this other UFC promotion called the Pride Fighting Championship.
Yes, which was, I remember Pride. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So that was a Japanese-based or Japan-based promotion. Had tons of the best fighters out there, but also did not have a steroid check at all. So no blood test. So everyone was juiced to the gills in fighting, which was amazing. But they had no rules for the 12 to 6. Elbow strike or knees to the head on the ground or soccer kicks, and no one died. Compared to, so I don't know.
Pride was I think at one point it got bought by the people who at least owned UFC.
Right.
I believe they were run separately for a bit. And then it just ended, right? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But no, I think if you have subscription to UFC, you can probably watch all the UFC. The Pride
stuff.
Yeah, exactly. You should, if anyone has access to that, watch some fights, some Pride fights, because they're amazing.
Do you have any other recommendations in terms of in terms of giving somebody a sense of, if you're like, you never really watched UFC, I want to get into it. Like, what, you know, is there stuff that they should be like trying to dig around and search for, like in terms of specific fights or, you know, I think anything that's like upcoming, where would you point them to first?
What gets me hyped up with MMA, if I'm slowly getting bored with it, is I look up old clips of fighters that I really like. One of them is Fedor Emelianenko. I'm not going to spell that out because I don't know how to spell Emelianenko. But he, I think his nickname was the Last Emperor.
That's an awesome nickname.
Yeah, that is actually. Yeah. And he was basically undefeated in Pride for forever. And his style was just very, he had a very stoic face, but once he went in, it was just chaos. He would just be able to ground and pound someone without any issue.
It looks like he almost went to the UFC, but he chose mm-hmm. This was post Pride shutting down. I think he was in Strikeforce for a bit as well.
Yeah. There was a period where everyone
he's still fighting. He's still fighting in Bellator.
I think he lost his last fight.
It does. It looks like he, in October 2021, he won a fight via knockout, but that doesn't mean he's had a fight since. The wiki might not have been updated. That's amazing. 45 years old and just like, still fighting.
He was a beast. He was a beast.
Any other like memorable fights?
This one fighter, Genki Sudo, he was also in Pride. His entrances were like almost Las Vegas style, like boxer entrances, where it's just like full dancers. He was in like a full costume and everything, and it made the show just like amazing. And he was an amazing fighter too. And he has crazy dance moves if you do watch his videos.
Personality. Suggest watching him.
Yeah, personality. It's a huge thing in MMA. Because the boring fighters are not that fun to watch.
I mean, that is the thing too of like, I feel like in terms of like time commitment, in terms of like, if you're like, you know, have a couple of people that you're like super interested in, you can just like wait for them to be fighting. I mean, that's a perfectly valid way to like follow UFC. I think that like, if you're like, I'm a big, you know, whoever fan, you can just follow what they're doing rather than, you know, I feel like as like a, you know, a more traditional sports fan, I'm always like, I got to watch this like Jays game on a Monday night.
Everyone.
I'm like, or like know the score. Whereas like with this, you could just like pick and choose who you want to watch. It makes some sense.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I usually just follow like four or five fighters. And then the rest are just like fillers. And but I do still watch them just in case I do see someone like coming up. That's when you can see like really good fighters. Start from the beginning, you know?
I think I'm going to have to find some new fighters. I think a lot of the people that like I knew, I was looking at a list of like best UFC fights to watch. And I'm like, I know Forrest Griffin and Stephen Bonner. No way they are still fighting, you know?
Nope, not at all.
Is McGregor going to come back? Is McGregor ever going to come back? Or is he just a boxer now?
I'm pretty sure he'll come back for like one fight for the money. Like, I don't know how much he made the last fight, but I know the fight he made with, or the fight he had with Mayweather, he made like $20 million in like 20 minutes, which is just insane.
Oh yeah, he did come back in 2021, right? And he broke his tibia.
Right. But
if you're into that stuff, there's lots of that in MMA history of just like a guy breaking his leg.
If you're into a lot of slow motion footage too of that.
Yeah.
It's not that fun to watch, but
some people can't look away, Mike. No. All right, cool. Anything else before we go? Do you have anything you want to promote or advertise?
I got nothing.
Okay.
Listen to the Hound Dog podcast. Hosted by our friend, Mikey the Hound Dog Harrison.
Our former roommate. Yeah.
Yes,
indeed. Mikey Harrison. Yeah. All right, amazing. Thank you so much for joining us, Mike.
Hey, thanks for having me.
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com. For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
Welcome back. It's time to talk about, if not my favorite thing, one of my favorite things in sports, which is transactions. I'm here with the wonderful Michael J. Clark. MJC, how you doing?
Great. Hot stove. Let's talk about it.
Hot stove. The stove is hot. It's actually
been scalding, baby.
It's actually been, I feel like, a little bit cold. I feel like sometimes there's like a few days before they'll be like, ooh, a little trade. Somebody gets out ahead. And I feel like they're really, we're going to date ourselves. It's July 27th as we're recording. So there's a few more days until the trade deadline.
So Daniel Vogelbach doesn't move the needle for you there, Chris?
He went to the Mets, right? Is that is that correct? Yeah, I did see there was already a video of him running the bases. So I guess there have been a few little trades. Yeah, okay. All right. The stove is heating up. MJC, you're correct. I have a list. I pulled it from CBS Sports.com. We'll run through the top five trade candidates who they have. We'll talk about any, if there's any notable exceptions from there. Maybe actually this will be good. You and I can predict where the players are going to go. And after the trade deadline, we'll see who wins. We'll take the top five. And then fans of teams in divisions, I like to think we're in some sort of race. I look at the games back and I'm like, oh, I guess not really. You a Yankees fan, I a Jays fan. We'll discuss what we would like our teams to do at the trade deadline.
Awesome.
All right, let's start with number five. An interesting name on the list. Notorious Sellers, the Oakland Athletics, have some pieces that they might be trading. I think actually they have two names in the top five. Actually, if we want to bundle them together, perhaps we'll bundle them together. But they have a catcher in the form of Sean Murphy, and they have a pitcher in the form of Frankie Montas, who both, I would presume both of them get the Montas for sure. I feel like the Athletics are like, yeah, pitcher who's like pretty decent. Yeah, we'll trade that guy.
Yeah, and in fact, you could probably lump in a third piece that Oakland's trying to deal, and that's Ramon Laureano.
Ramon Laureano also.
If anyone needs outfield help.
He is. Wouldn't that be quite the package? If there's one thing the Blue Jays do not need, it is catching.
true. My guy, Alejandro.
Yeah, Alejandro Kirk, you have Danny Jansen. I believe as of today, at least for Baseball America, Gabriel Moreno was bumped up to the number one prospect in baseball. I might be wrong about that. I know there was a new number one prospect, and they put their thing behind a paywall. But so Sean Murphy, catching a tough position, normally one where you might have to sacrifice a little bit of the bat. Murphy's under control for a fair amount of time, I think, until the 2025 season. There's some fits: the Rays, the Astros, the Giants, and then I think you could add every other contender. Who doesn't have like a solid number one catcher?
Sure, and I agree with you with that. With the Rays losing Mike Zunino for the season, we'll probably be looking for an upgrade over like Francisco Mejia, whoever is going to be catching the bulk of the games in St. Pete. But it's interesting about the Astros because they love Martin Maldonado. He's a great He calls a great game and like his pitchers like adore him, but he's at nothing at the bat. It's like letting the pitcher bat when Martin Maldonado gets in the game.
As I'm saying, it's like, the trade-off, I'm trying to think of like recent catcher trades as well, because it's not just that you come and, if you're a bat, you could be a bat in the lineup. You also have to develop a relationship with, probably two to three of the, depending on whether you're coming in as like the number one guy or the number two catcher, to develop a relationship with like two to three pitchers, not to mention the entire bullpen. So I think I'm really, I feel like the midseason catcher trait is actually, I'd be interested to see how often it totally works out.
Now, here's why I would say I don't think Houston is a player in a deal with the A's because you didn't want to trade in division. Mm-hmm. I don't think the A's management cares. I don't think they care about anything right now. They don't.
What are they doing? What are the Oakland Athletics? What is their game plan?
That management group is, I don't think they're very popular amongst
A's fans. Can I be as cynical as possible and just say, are they purposely trying to get out of the city? They want out of that stadium. It's like, we're refusing to build anything until we get to, we'll be so bad we'll have to, like, we just won't run baseball, and then we'll have to, we'll get out of the contract and we'll get to move.
Yeah, who knows? I've seen it before.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's a good point that the Ash, you know, that, like, yeah, typically in division trade, probably not likely, but I think when you have the Athletics on the board, I don't think that they care at all. Potentially the Astros care more in terms of potentially what prospects they give up to then go to Oakland, but I feel like it's almost like a farm system. You might be able to get them back eventually.
Yeah, for sure. I think Montas will be interesting because I think a lot of teams are looking for an arm, especially a starting pitcher down the stretch. I know the Yankees are one of them.
I think that for the front line for Montas seems to be the Mets, the Yankees, the Reds. It's interesting that they have the Red Sox in it because I don't think the Red Sox are. If anything, I think they're. To say that the Red Sox are full on sellers ever, I think is a bit of a mistake. I think probably they will end up trading. Or could be trading JD Martinez, mm-hmm. But they're not. I don't foresee them as a seller. But yeah, they're interested. They're on here as like a contender for Montas. And this article got released today. I have to say, I very much enjoyed. And you and I, might differ in our teams. It was very fun to see the Blue Jays completely wipe the floor with the Boston Red Sox.
I quite enjoyed it.
It was pretty fun. The most runs ever scored in a game, the most runs ever scored in a series by for the Jays, setting their own team record at the most ever. That was very fun. But yeah, they're on this list along with what this list does a lot, every other contender. Do you have a prediction for either Sean Murphy, Montas, even where Laureano would go?
Let's bring them to Tampa.
You can bring them all in a package.
Yeah.
That feels a little un-Tampa like, but I think
it does. It does. I'm trying to think of squads that have holes in, you know, both battery positions, you know?
Yeah. I feel like the Giants maybe makes some sense there.
Okay. Yeah, Joey Bart is disappointing this year, and
coming off of their not recently, but like, yeah, no more Buster Posey behind the plate, so certainly looking for someone else there. I don't think that they're like super set in the outfield, so you know, would not hurt to have Ramon Laureano. I don't think he's hitting particularly well, but always has a good glove. And sure. Then what team couldn't use pitching? Did you see the clip of Carlos Rodon kicking a bat and hitting his teammate in the leg?
I did, and hit poor Wilmer Flores.
Yeah, that guy, I've seen him cry on a field. Please do not kick a bat at Wilmer Flores. And then I think he also hit somebody. He swung back with his glove, and I think he hit somebody as well. Carlos Rodon maybe needs to calm.
Can I take a breath?
Yeah, I'm not telling you. React to whoever you want to react. Yes, yes. I think mindful of your other players.
Yes.
Yeah, he kicked a bat at Wilmer Flores. So sad. All right, number four on this list from the Pittsburgh Pirates. Boy, I would like the Pittsburgh Pirates to be good again at some point. But they have their outfielder, Brian Reynolds.
Okay.
He has three more years of control. This is a very interesting list in terms of a lot of the people who are, I guess this makes sense that they're putting them at the top of the desirable list is these guys with control, which I think teams are valuing more than ever. Even where you could see the people on the list here, the Giants, the Yankees, the Cardinals. How would you feel about Brian Reynolds showing up to Yankee Stadium?
I mean, I think Brian Reynolds would be a welcome addition to the team. He's not on the top of my wish list when it comes to outfielders, but I'm sure we'll get to that.
There's a big one out there. There's a big one out on the line.
Sure. That's fantasy world, but I think that Brian Reynolds is going to be. I think pitchers are going to take a lot of calls on. I guess one team that I can see. One thing I could see really pushing for them for Reynolds, and I don't know about their minor league situation, but I feel like the Phillies need an outfielder, especially with Harper not playing the outfield for the foreseeable future. You know, Castellanos is already not making making friends with the Philly media.
What do you mean? They, it was a silly, yeah. Did you hear the booze? I think it made
a question for a second. Yeah. But by the way, like,
I don't know.
I get it, Nick. Like, I've wanted to sass stupid questions before when I shouldn't, but.
Yeah, they don't have much. They have Castellanos, Adubel Herrera, and
Matt Schwarber.
And Schwarber, which preferably I would presume you don't want Schwarber playing in the field. That's a fun, it's a fun destination for Brian Reynolds, is the, the Phillies. Yeah, I threw Laureano at the Giants, so I won't do that. Yeah, so we get the Cardinals roster as well. We're currently, the Blue Jays are currently playing the St. Louis Cardinals.
Well, they're playing a majority of St. Louis Cardinals.
Yes.
They're skipping to future Hall of Famers.
But. Can I vent about this very quickly? Because I know that's not, your point is not, I don't think you're saying anything. I am so annoyed every time a new team comes to Toronto and there's an article about like, Paul Goldschmidt, Nolan Arenado, not coming to Toronto. And then people are like, what an unfair advantage. Every Toronto Blue Jays player has to be vaccinated or they would miss half of their games. Because the United States has the same policy as Canada, where you cannot enter the country if you're not vaccinated to play baseball. And so it's so annoying every time. They're like, oh, this is an unfair advantage. And it's like, we can't. And also, speaking of the trade deadline, can't trade it for anybody who's unvaccinated. Yeah. The one thing about if I said Brian Reynolds to the Cardinals, the only thing that would disappoint me is we have a new contender, MJC, for one of the best names in baseball. And the St. Louis Cardinals currently have a player called Lars Nootbaar. And
of course, yes.
If Brian Reynolds gets traded to the Cardinals, there's a chance that Lars Nootbaar gets sent down to the minors. And I feel like I personally would feel responsible. Yeah. Reynolds, I feel like in the same way that I think sometimes with the free agency market, that he feels like he's going to be like, well, we didn't get that guy, but we got Brian Reynolds. I think he's going to be how perhaps a team feels coming out of the trade deadline.
Yeah, yeah. I think that, you know, as a Yankee fan, I think that I heard that from a lot of Yankee fans about like Anthony Rizzo in the offseason.
Right.
They're like, oh, no Matt Olson, no Freddie Freeman, but we got Anthony Rizzo back. Like, to which I say, well, who's having a better season? But anyway.
Well, while we're on the, because he's not on this list. Actually, he is on this list, way down the list. Do you think Joey Gallo is a New York Yankee after the trade deadline?
No.
I do. But who's taking him? Is it, he's going to be a complete salary dump? Or he's getting released?
So, I have heard from, you know, one of these baseball reporters or whoever that there is like interest in him. I think he'll be traded for like a bucket of baseballs.
Yes. Those are real. We did a trade a quiz a while ago, which I don't think a bucket of maybe bucket. I think somebody has been literally traded for a bucket of
baseballs. No, he's essentially like he doesn't start anymore. Like he's not starting today. He didn't start yesterday. He's on his way out the door.
Yeah.
And if that means I have to like DFA him, I think that they will DFA him if no one is like.
If there's a team that would be willing to DFA him, it feels like it's could be the Yankees. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like perhaps the White Sox could also be a contender for Brian Reynolds. They have,
okay, so the White Sox, yes. they have Lou Robb, they have Eloy, and Vaughn.
They have Engel and Pollock and Vaughn.
Yeah, I think they have a lot of. What's up with the White? Like what? Like what? What's missing for the White Sox?
Maybe Tony La Russa.
Is it a manager that isn't senile, or what's going on?
Maybe. I think so. Yeah. I don't know. Is it pitching? Do they need pitching? Who do they have pitching?
Well, they still have Giolito and Lance Lynn, but neither of them are very good.
And they got Cueto.
Cease is very good this year. Kopech has had some good games. I don't know. I don't think their pen is that great.
Well, they have Hendricks and Graveman and Kelly.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what's up with them, but they're so middling. They're 49 and 49.
They are the definition of mid.
And I guess maybe perhaps me saying, like, you should go get Brian Reynolds. It's not Brian.
Yeah, right?
Maybe you need something bigger than that. What about the Guardians?
Can you believe that I don't think they will be, but it's not out of the question to say that the Baltimore Orioles might be buyers at the deadline?
I think that they're not. I mean, they have a better record than the White Sox, I guess, by half a game, because they're 49 and 48. So if I'm saying that, like, yeah, the White Sox are, but then I guess I have to therefore say the Orioles are potential buyers. I think the Orioles, though, I mean, they're still so, like, this feels like the beginning of an upswing, I think, for the Orioles.
Sure.
So, you know, buying at the cost of, I mean, again, like, a lot of these guys are like, that are here at the top of the list. Like, Brian Reynolds has three more seasons of control. Yeah. That's not that bad. That's not that bad of an idea. I guess. Yeah.
All right. Who's number three on the list?
Well, three was Frankie Montas. So we'll skip Frankie.
Okay. Yeah. We'll
Frankie
skip
Montas. Number two, biggest pitching arm on the board, from the Cincinnati Reds, Luis Castillo.
Okay.
I've been intrigued by Luis Castillo because he's been very much on the watch list of many a Blue Jays fan I follow. But possible fits, I think Mets, Dodgers, and Yankees, I think, are the big three.
I think that I see him as a Yankee. I think that Cashman will part with some of his better prospects, Peraza, maybe Volpe, maybe even Glaber. I don't know. I think that they will. I think they're all in on Castillo. So I think they will trade for
Castillo. Yankees have a strong farm system currently. Their strongest one in a couple of years. Ranked 13th, I think, coming into this season. I don't know how much that has changed, but yeah, feels like why not take some. Spend. I mean, should we just talk about these in correlation with each other between two and one? Because you have the biggest pitcher on the board, and number one, very clearly, the headliner, the main event of the trade deadline is Juan Soto leaving the Washington Nationals. And I think similarly, I think the Dodgers and the Yankees feel like he's going to end up there if he gets traded. I feel. I feel like there's a chance he doesn't.
I think that the Cardinals are in play for Soto.
Yes, also in play. Yes,
but
at the expense of Lars Nupar. How dare you?
Yeah. this is, you know, I joked about it with the A's and the Astros situation. This is a situation where I especially considering that there's a chance he'll sign like a massive contract. I don't think that Mike Rizzo wants to trade him to the Mets. Like, I don't think he'll like want to have to face him 20 times a year. Or I don't know. Actually, I need to stop saying that because of the new schedule starting next year.
That's true. Decrease in the amount of times you play people in your own division, and you play every other team at least once. I don't know. I still think he doesn't go to the Mets.
I'm gonna go out there and I'm gonna say that in 1 week after the trade deadline, Juan Soto still a National. I think that's
like a very good bet. I think to me, I feel like, you know, as much as I feel like the Yankees still have this reputation of being like the juggernaut franchise, nobody is more juggernaut than the Los Angeles Dodgers, a team that continues to like to trade for big names and a team that will like sign.
Are they just like clone prospects? Like what?
I believe
they always win their division, so they should like have bad drafting. Like,
international security. Free agents, baby.
I don't.
That's why we need an international draft. Yeah, the Dodgers are 65-32. Doesn't this feel like, as much as you're being like, yeah, in a week, I think Juan Soto will be a National. Doesn't it also feel like in a week from now, it's like, oh yeah, Juan Soto's a Dodger. That's annoying.
Oh my God. If that,
I don't even know.
It'll be cute when Soto joins the Dodgers. And they still know when the World Series is here.
Yeah, he could do the, he could also do the, like, the other thing that feels right is the, like, yeah, does he go to the Cardinals, but then he leaves to go to the Dodgers when he's a free agent? I guess he still has some, how many more years of control? Like a couple more years of control, right? I don't know. It just feels like he's going to, I'm just trying to look at the, they're currently, like, I think trotting, like, Trace Thompson, and they're the team that like puts the most, I never know where anybody's playing.
Like guys like Gavin Lux and Dustin May and, young guys that, keep hearing about, but who knows?
Because currently their outfielders also is Bellinger, Betts and Trace Thompson.
Yeah.
Did you see Clay at the game? Did you see the highlights of this? Clay Thompson was so psyched for Trace Thompson.
That is very cool.
Yeah.
Now, you know who we haven't mentioned at all is and who I think are definitely gonna be buyers, are the Mariners.
Yes. I would very much love for the Mariners to make the playoffs. I would like it for it not to be at the expense of the Toronto Blue Jays, which I,
of course.
The run recently since the All-Star break has been tremendous from the Blue Jays. But the Mariners did mess up the Blue Jays for a bit there when they were in Seattle. So any tiebreaker stuff as the Mariners, the longest drought in MLB postseason, it'd be super fun to see the Mariners make the playoffs. I don't know what their farm system is like. Let me try and pull that information.
They're number two. They got some guys in the Edwin Diaz Cano deal to the Mets. So like they have Jared Kelnick, who like has been a disappointment so far, but he's still like young and I guess has promise.
So at the beginning of the season, Julio Rodriguez is not being traded. They have Noelvi Marte as the number 11th prospect. George Kirby is a pitcher at number 32. Emerson Hancock at number 82. They have six players, at least at the preseason in the top. They can make a big deal. It's funny. We talked about the Orioles. They have the number one farm system in the league, which on one hand I can be like, don't blow up your farm system. But also like the only reason to build a really good farm system is to let your good prospects come up and trade away a bunch of them at some point.
Yeah. You can't hold on to everyone. You can't play everyone. As much as my dad doesn't want any of the prospects to ever be traded from the Yankees, can't play everybody.
One of the first baseball podcasts I ever listened to was called Prospects That Will Break Your Heart.
I think the big narrative when it comes to Soto and the Yankees' interest in him is like the uncertain future of Aaron Judge in pinstripes. And I think that people kind of see him as, oh, if the Yankees trade for Soto at the deadline, he could be like the replacement for Judge, and like Judge can walk then.
That feels wild to me. Juan Soto is very good. Aaron Judge is also extremely good at baseball.
I think the arguments that people use for Soto, and I'm not using I'm being a straw man right now, are, he's still only 23. He's like one of the best players in baseball. He already has a ring. And Judge is going to be 31 at the start of next season. And people are afraid of his like injury history.
I can see the fear.
As a Yankee fan,
yes,
I adore Aaron Judge. Like, Judge is my guy. Like, I love Judge. I never want to see Judge play for another team. Like, he's a big fella at number 99. He's going to hit, he's going to break the American League home record this year. Like, just like, I would find it very hard to see Judge in a different uniform next season. And I get that that's out of Yankees' control. Like, he could, you know, sign with whoever pays him the most money. And, like, there's a chance that the Yankees aren't that team or who gives him the most years. And the Yankees aren't going to go, like, give him 10 years. He's 30, going to be 31 years old. So,
yeah, I mean, he definitely.
Did you see, by the way, the Marley Rivera awkward interview with him?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, at the All-Star, during All-Star weekend.
I'll check it out.
Marley Rivera comes up to him and says, like, there's an 8-year-old boy who I was speaking to, and he's a Yankee fan, and says, say it ain't so, that Aaron Judge might not be a Yankee next year. What do you say to that, Aaron Judge? It's just like,
Like, Jacob, buddy, we've got a lot of great Yankees on the team. There's a lot of great Yankees. I'll be here for a long time. Wow. That's pretty awkward. Judge does feel like a guy, as much as he's like so good. Yeah, he's hit 38 home runs at this point. It's like one less than he hit last year. He does potentially feel like a guy who's, he's going to get paid a lot of money. And, you know, we're like seeing some of these like huge contracts that were given out, you know, what, like 10-ish years ago, now kind of being like, yeah, we got to pay Albert Pujols a lot of money. I guess he's not, I guess, because he's like moved on. Who's on the hook for that contract?
So, you know, so far, this has been probably like the best example of a player betting on themselves and being like, I'm going to, you know, like, I'm not going to sign the deal. I'm going to show you what, and with like every home run, like the price tag is going up and up and up.
Yeah, what a final year of the contract to just like be belting 38 home runs before the end of July. Yeah, that's wild. Is there any other name? I'm going to officially also put Luis Castillo. I'm going to put him. I think he'll be a Met.
Like a Met to me. Interesting. That would be that rotation in the playoffs would be yowza.
Yeah. Yowza. Any other names on the list? Any other, you know?
Well, so there's the Benintendi question.
Yeah.
Where I think that a few teams were more jazzed on Andrew Benintendi like 2 weeks ago, before they found out that he will not be making any trips to Rogers Center in the near future.
Do you think, I don't think, as somebody, like, I think it affects the Blue Jays plans a lot, and it maybe affects, like, so the wild card game now is a 3-game series right off the bat. So, you know, but even then you're potentially risking, like, if the Jays are the second wild card and you're the whatever other placement that ends up being, you're risking like a game. I think it changes the Blue Jays plans a lot. I don't know how much it changes. I mean, certainly it's like a gamble if you like trade for Benintendi and he doesn't get vaccinated and you know, you're end up against, you know, say he goes even, you know, to the Dodgers as Dodgers against Blue Jays. Yeah, that sucks. That does suck. It's a big, you know, it's a miscalculation to a degree, but I also think, I don't know how much front offices are going to be like vaccination status is going to come into play, but I don't know.
The other outfielder that, you know, the Yankees have been talking about that, you know, could be interesting is Ian Happ. I wouldn't mind one of those guys. I think they definitely, Yankees definitely use an outfielder. You know, G just went on the IL, yesterday, you know, they're playing Matt Carpenter in right field right now. And like, Matt Carpenter is a cute story and has been a cute story. Mm-hmm. He should not be playing right field for a Major League Baseball team right now. Especially one with, even as like, as middle of the pack as they've been playing recently, it's still the best record in the baseball. He should not be playing right field right now.
Yeah, Hap's a funny, I think a little, like, he came on this list at number 7. I actually think he's a little bit underrated in terms of like what somebody might be getting. He has a really strong OPS plus. He's actually never had an OPS plus under 100, although last year he was at 102. But he has a good batting average, gets on base a lot. His strikeout rate has gone down a fair bit. I think he's at 21% this year. Like he used to be striking out closer to 40%. So I don't know. Ian Happ feels like a good little pickup for a team.
Yeah. And then a name that I saw. Did Josh Johnson hit a home run? Nope, off the wall. a name that a report came out yesterday, I think, that the Tigers are willing to part with. It could be interesting. Is Skubal the lefty starter?
And he basically said their whole team. Basically, they have some good bullpen arms. I wouldn't mind the Jays trying to snap.
Now, if we transition into both like our team's needs right now, what would you say is like the priority for you guys as buyers at the deadline?
Yeah, the Toronto Blue Jays, certainly offense is not the issue. Okay. To after scoring 28 runs in a game the other day. It is pitching. I think both they need a starter and I think they need some relief help. The other than sort of a few guys he knows he can go to, and Romano, Tim Mays is their like lefty setup guy. He's been pretty good. David Phelps, for a guy who just keeps signing like minor league deals, right, has been really good. So that's fun, but that's also like when, you know, unfortunately, like when is it going to end? A little bit to your like Matt Carpenter story, to a lesser degree. But I think
what's the status of Julian Merriweather? Is he like
injured and always injured? That's just like pretty much exactly. Yeah,
because like whenever he would pitch against the Yankees, he would always like be phenomenal. I'm like, oh my gosh, this guy! But he apparently can't stay on the field.
There was, I think it might have been 2020 when they called Merriweather up, and Merriweather and Romano like pitched. I think Merriweather pitched to like Judge and Stanton, and just like threw it by them, and everyone was like, this is it. This is good. And we traded Josh Donaldson for Julian Merriweather, which people for a bit, I think that like when he had those good games with the Yankees, they're like, maybe it was worth it to trade. It's like, oh no, he's just injured all the time. But yeah, I think a starting pitcher, because Ryu is out for the year and Kikuchi has, that contract has been kind of bad. They definitely need a starter. As much as I think that they could get Luis Castillo, I think it could be really fun. I mean, last year they went and got Barrios. They could do it again. I kind of see them in like whatever the second tier down. They just like Barrios has actually been pretty good recently. Gausman has been really good and Manoah has been amazing. So I don't think you need the like, yeah, take the best guy if you could get him. But I know Syndergaard has been a name that's around. There's a lot of Jay's Twitter being like, just try to go get Otani. Just been like, I don't think that's going to happen. If Juan Soto is going to stay a National, I think absolutely Otani is going to stay an Angel. But boy, is there anything more frustrating than the Angels just continually being bad with Mike Trout and Shohei Otani?
It's crazy.
I hate it. Not that I want them to beat the Jays or anything, but like, it's so sad. Can you be better? But those are really the needs. And then you're looking at like bench options, just some like kind of upgrades to who we have currently. Bradley Zimmer plays a lot. Like he probably doesn't need to play a lot on a contender. I don't mind the guy, but yeah. So that's what the Jays are kind of looking at. Probably a starter, probably some bullpen help. And then you're looking at like a bench utility role player guy, probably. Sure.
Yeah. So I would say for the Yanks, I think their priorities are right now, I would say, a reliever, because they just lost Mike King for the season. That's a huge loss for them, because
he had been
phenomenal for them all season. I think they need another starting pitcher. And I thought that before Severino even got injured. So, I think that it's definitely a need for them. And then third, I would put an outfielder. I think those are like the big three that I think need to be upgraded for sure.
Makes sense.
Yeah. And if they also, if they don't end up using Oswaldo Peraza in a trade to get like a Castillo or a Soto or like a big splash like that.
There's also the Nationals want to get Corbin's contract off the book and want to potentially package him with Soto. So
yeah, which
that could happen as well.
Speaking of a bag of balls, like that's what he's Corbin for Soto for Gallo straight up. I don't know who who's going to say no to that first. So if Peraza isn't dealt to improve their pitching or their outfield, I think that he should be called up, and I think he should take some of the shortstop at bats from IKF. I think it's going to be a good end of the season. Oh, you know what else we didn't mention at all? We didn't mention Milwaukee at all.
Yeah, Milwaukee certainly could be buying. I don't know what their farm system is like at all.
Yeah, but I don't know. Speaking of Milwaukee, I will say that a guy that I like much more now that he like doesn't hit tanks against the Yankees, doesn't abuse the Yankees, is Rowdy Tellez.
Rowdy Tellez.
Just like, I don't want to see him up in a big spot right now.
He's on
the Brewers. I'm like, oh, go off, Rowdy. Like, hit 2 home runs in a game.
Also a cool name. He has a great baseball name. A little bit like didn't quite. I mean, he was never like, you know, projected to be anything like no superstar. But I think some people on the Blue Jays, you know, the feeling that like, oh, he's going to come up and hit bombs is not, I think, what most people who watched every game of the
Blue Jays. Maybe he's good against the Yankees.
I think those are fun. We could do an episode on that one time, right? Of like, who are your teams? Get people to submit like who do you irrationally hate from another team because they're only good against your team.
You're convinced is like has like a 500 batting average against your team.
There's some Tampa Bay Rays who I'm like, I feel that way about. I know I'm pretty sure what's his name, the outfielder, is just out for the full the rest of the season.
Kiermaier's a stiff, and then like he'll like hit a home run against your team, be like, what? Like Kevin Kiermaier?
I know. It's so annoying. All right. This has been fun. I love transaction. I love
talking hot stove, man.
Hot stove. We'll see. Maybe we'll come back in later towards the end of the season. We'll see how it ripped up, and we'll have to, you know, look at our predictions and see who won. Do you have anything
maybe,
you want to
maybe maybe as the season changes and we get into the fall, maybe in a few months from now, maybe we'll chat again, who knows,
perhaps. Do you have anything you want to promote or plug?
I would like to promote the PSR movie recap podcast, which I'm about to tape with you very soon.
Time travel. We're gonna count down the top 10 baseball movies of all time.
That's gonna be a lot of fun. That's it.
Okay, cool. Thank you so much for joining me.
My pleasure.
All right. Thank you so much to Mikey G. Thanks so much to MJC for joining me. I thought both discussions were great. A lot of fun. I am so excited for the trade deadline. It's like one of my favorite days. I like to do this weird thing where I like to, as the trades are happening, like see how quickly they can put like the new hat on their pictures and just see how weird it is to see them in a different uniform. I love the trade deadline. I love transactions. All right. Thanks so much for joining me. As always, if you have suggestions for sports you would love to hear covered on the show, please let me know. I'm on Twitter at Hi From Grace. You can send me a tweet or send me a DM. You can also email me grace@postshowrecaps.com, and I will get that as well. I have a few other things going on if you're interested, covering lots of TV over at Post Show Recaps, Blackbird, The Old Man, What We Do in the Shadows, and lots more League of Their Own coming up, which some folks might be interested in. So that is exciting. Covering weekly, doing weekly movie coverage, covered The Gray Man and Nope. All of that good stuff. If you could please check out the Off Speed feed. So it's robisawebsite.com/offspeedfeed to get all of your Offspeed podcasts all in one place. That would be amazing. I also want to let you know about the Married at First Sight wrap up. They're actually no longer that. They are now a Perfect Match, a Married at First Sight podcast. Co-hosts Asia Welch and Jason Reed are back to discuss season 15, taking place in San Diego. Asia and Jason discuss each episode weekly with humor and a healthy dose of skepticism. But wait, what is this show? Married at First Sight is about strangers trusting a group of experts to find their spouse. 10 brave singles meet their spouse at the altar, creating 5 couples that will go on an 8-week journey through the wedding, honeymoon, living together, and then finally decision day, where they decide to stay married or get divorced. There's drama, comedy, love, and everything in between. Whether you watch the show or not, Asia and Jason will hold your hand throughout it all with amazing guests along the way. You should subscribe to their feed at robisawebsite.com/firstsightfeed, and their pod is also available on the Reality TV Wrap Ups Network. That's all from me. Hope you enjoyed this episode, and I will see you in a couple of weeks. And with that, the podcast is over.